Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, store news, and whatever games, movies, and TV is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show.
Welcome to Roguecast, episode 221, and coming to you live. And not in the middle of midnight. We're not live at all.
No. Okay.
We're live now, but when they're hearing it, and we don't edit it, so we're live in the same way Saturday Night Live is live.
We're live and we have a studio audience.
Yes. Sure.
That's right. And I'm going to be doing my doing a sketch in a little bit.
Yeah.
I'll be doing my wacky character. I don't know what it is, but let's see what turns up during the
thought you were just going to do, like, you were going to draw a sketch for, podcast, which, I thought was really, a good thing.
We're going to play Pictionary Live, everybody. He's drawing a very funny clown right now. Just trust me.
We're going to start a weekly Pictionary podcast.
We're going to play
People play Pictionary anymore?
I don't think they
do. I feel like it's been subsumed by other games.
They play Cards Against Humanity.
Can we play charades? Can we play charades on a podcast?
Yes. The charades and Pictionary podcast.
Nick is gesticulating wildly.
I think
that's basically the descriptor for everything we do. We're all just gesticulating.
He said one word. He says it's one word. It's a movie.
We can't tell, but he's definitely gesticulating.
Yeah, he's making motions.
Wait, it's getting wild.
Why is he flopping on the ground? I don't know.
Now Nick's having a seizure.
That'll be my SNL character, the wild gesticulator.
Isn't that what they called Reagan? No, it's a great communicator. But our next president would be the wild gesticulator.
I thought you were just, doing your impersonation of one of those weird floppy men outside of a used car.
I just had a seizure, okay?
So anyway, September's a big month for the store. Like, we got a ton of stuff coming. Like, every weekend there's stuff going.
Mm-hmm.
So this Sunday, this is August still, this Sunday Steve Jackson Games is going to be doing a playtest of some of their Munchkin stuff coming up.
Oh, right. Is this like the Star Munchkin and stuff?
We don't know. Okay. It's a secret.
Oh.
So come out from 1 to 3 on Sunday and playtest. Go over to the Facebook event and RSVP to it.
Yep.
If you're a fan of anything Munchkin, I suggest
we have a lot of fans of Munchkin-y things.
Yep.
Now I have a quick question, and if the answer is no,
is this going to be a question that I don't know the answer to?
Yes.
Okay.
And if the answer is no, it'll also make us look like sad sacks.
Okay.
Do they have sometimes Munchkin? They have cool little giveaways that are sometimes exclusive. Do we have any idea if they'll have any cool giveaways?
I would assume they will, but I do not know for sure.
Sometimes there's those cool unique cards or a bookmark or some badge or something you can wear to the game. That's going to be cool.
One of these cases where you ask me something that I have no way of knowing. And I'd be like, I don't know. I wouldn't prepare.
We all have phones. We have ways of knowing everything.
Do we?
Yeah.
Okay. At any rate,
I could find DB Cooper on my phone right now.
We know who DB Cooper is now, right? Didn't they discover it?
Yeah,
I believe they did actually.
Yeah.
Finally,
it was some guy who was a notable suspect even before that.
Yeah.
For our younger audience members who don't know, D.B. Cooper was a guy who stole some money in the 70s.
Yep.
He robbed, a plane, and he parachuted out, and they didn't find him.
Nobody found him.
And they made a movie about it.
Yeah, did they? What was the movie called? All the President's Men.
Who is D.B. Cooper? I don't know.
Dave does not have his phone in his hand.
I'm going to guess it's just called D.B. Cooper.
It could be.
The True Life Adventures of D.B. Cooper.
I mean, that story has been wildly...
D.B. Cooper 2 Fallen Kingdom.
Dave, I think your wacky character should be D.B. Cooper.
What if his bit on my sketch is that everything he does, he'll do on a plane, he'll order dinner and then just parachute out. But always something ridiculous.
What if he always identifies himself in full as D.B. Cooper? I, D.B. Cooper, would like the steak, not the fish.
We think he might be D.B. Cooper.
I don't think he just jumps out thinking he's on a plane.
He just
jumps out a window or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing. He jumps out. Of.
You'll never find me.
Anyway, September's a big month for the store.
Oh yeah, yeah. What else? So we got Steve Jackson's thing this last week, in August. What else we got?
So in September,
up?
We're running. We'll be running 3 more D&D 101s, which have been very popular.
Yes.
We're doing one on Saturday, September 1st, one on Sunday, September 2nd, and one on Sunday, September 16th.
Yep.
So plenty of time for those. Spread the word if you have people who want to learn how D&D. They've been very successful. You pay $10, you get a set of dice and a dice bag, and 3-hour session.
Evil.
You fight some evil.
Yeah.
We have our Labor Day sale coming up, Monday, September 3rd. There'll be more details on that soon, but we always have a sale on that day. Star Wars X-Wing 2nd Edition demo we're going to get that ahead of the release. So we're going to be able to demo the new games, not just the new core set, but also the conversion kit, so people could bring their old ships and see how the new game plays with those ships.
Very cool.
So that is going to be on Saturday, September 8th, and the release date should be the week after that. Batman Day is Saturday, September 15th.
Yep.
So this year we've got the first issue of Batman White Knight for the adults.
Yep.
And the first issue of Batman Little Gotham for the kids.
Oh, cool. White Knight was the one that had the kind of the alternate universe thing that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the switch, sort of the switch between Batman and Joker.
Yep.
Cured Joker and a fallen Batman.
Batman bad, Joker good.
Yep. That was interesting to watch that one, particularly pick up steam as it went along. It got, like, super big by the end.
Yeah, and well, now they're putting a graphic novel out as part of their first, was it DC Black?
Yeah, it's going to be one of their defining first books.
It's going to have a naked Harley Quinn in it.
Oh, that's right. Finally.
Yeah.
Couldn't find that on 100 deviant art pages. I guess.
I've heard. And then also we will have a variety of Batman masks for a buck a piece, so people can come in and get some Batman masks.
Cool.
We will have the Starfire.
Here's your naked Harley Quinn mask, kids.
I mean, technically, anything
could
be a
know.
Harley
yeah,
Quinn mask.
Yeah, true.
There's a Starfinder Munchkin launch weekend, so Saturday, September 22nd, we're going to demo Starfinder Munchkin, which is a combination of the popular Starfinder game
yep.
and popular Munchkin game.
Whoa.
Yeah. And if people come out, we'll get a promo card and a bookmark, and then some lucky winner will win a free copy of the Starfinder 2 expansion, which is coming out the same time as Starfinder Munchkin.
What? That's insane.
I know. So yeah, make sure and make time for that. And then finally, at the end of the month, we have Magic the Gathering Guilds of Ravnica pre-release. It's our first pre-release where we're actually going to have Saturday and Sunday.
So it's going to get nuts.
We'll have one on Saturday night, and we'll have two on Sunday, like all day. And people should come out and try that out.
Yes. You know, we have a land station that we use there, and sometimes yep. land cards go missing, and so they're a little we can be a little short on them at times. But a random kind stranger who was like selling off his magic collection donated it to us.
A kindly old wizard.
Kindly old wizard named Shazam.
Yep.
Said he's getting out of the magic business
and gave us all his cards.
But yeah, he had sold off his like really valuable ones and kind of gave us to like build some prize packs and starter packs. But there was also like a lot of land in there, so that was really cool of him.
Yeah,
it's so we're passing it on to the next generation.
Thank you, kind wizard stranger.
Yeah, thanks, Shazam. I hope your DC movie turns out to not suck.
Me too.
Actually, Jesus.
Digimon Hansu.
Digimon Hansu. is going to play him, and I think he's going to rock as Shazam no matter what.
I think he's going to be great. I'm super looking forward to that movie. Alright, a little bit of news, not a ton, but some interesting stuff. So, was I the one who watched the Slaughterhouse Rules trailer? Dave, you posted it, but did you not watch it?
I don't know, what is it?
It's the new thing from...
is it Simon Pegg?
It's Simon Pegg and Nick Frost teaming up again.
Oh yeah, I think somebody posted that on Autopilot. I did watch it. It didn't make a huge mark on me as a trailer. It looked all right. It looked fun.
I liked it because I like those two together. But also, like, I have a huge fondness for both Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead.
Yep.
Which is sort
those
of their...
Those are their best, I think.
It was sort of their take on the...
Actually, I feel like Spaced might be their best, but...
Well, Spaced is their best, yes. But as movies go, Shaun of the Dead, they're taking the zombie genre.
Yep.
Hot Fuzz, they're taking the action genre. The one... At the end,
and
World's End.
At World's End,
which I didn't love.
Is their take
much.
On the bar crawl genre?
No, it's their take on the alien invasion, the like
yeah.
Body snatchers, that kind of thing.
Right.
And then this one looks like their take on horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
But
it is.
This is not Edgar Wright.
That's what I was just looking up to see if Edgar Wright is. No, it is director Crispian Mills.
That's a British name, if
that's
ever
a
I heard
cereal.
One.
That's definitely a cereal.
Maybe it is a conglomeration of Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
That's the gestalt creature that they form.
Yes, I believe that is the case.
So he has directed and written previous to this something called A Fantastic Fear of Everything.
Okay.
Which is, yeah, I can't quite tell what that is.
There's youthful children going by outside our window,
yeah,
so if you hear
if you're
shrieking...
It's not any of the three of us.
Yeah.
It is disturbing.
Jesus yeah. Christ.
All right. So anyway... the trailer for me looked fun. I can't remember who the other guy was that was in it. It was,
They don't have what's-his-name back, do they? Who was it? Not Pierce Brosnan. Who was in,
Oh, Timothy Dalton.
No, Timothy Dalton's not back in this, is he?
Not in there.
Timothy Dalton was so good in in Hot Fuzz.
Timothy Dalton was great.
Yeah, this looks fun. It is their take on sort of the horror genre. So it's like, it's a boys' school. Simon Pegg is a teacher there. Nick Frost is this crazy crazy man, and they discover a hole that goes to hell.
Yep. Nick, did you watch the trailer?
I did not.
Okay. What'd you think of it?
From
hearing just the audio, did it sound great or weird or?
No, never loved screaming. Not unlike what we're experiencing right now.
All right. I guess we'll. One thing I've kind of noticed from their trailers is it actually is a little bit hard to pin down their movies from the trailers.
Yeah.
Like, they're not quite like the trailers look.
Right.
So I'll just be listening for word of mouth on this one, I'm sure. Like, you know, and Rotten Tomatoes and stuff. Like, do people generally like it? I'm betting it's probably going to be pretty good.
Me too. Although, didn't World's End get pretty good ratings? And I think neither you nor I really enjoyed it.
Like, didn't love it. Certainly not without moments.
Yeah, I didn't hate it. I just didn't love it.
Yeah.
You liked it quite a bit, right?
Yeah, I liked it. It's actually my favorite of the three.
Really?
Yeah,
interesting. I need to go back and rewatch it again. I always liked them.
Each have like some little. So there's other themes percolating, and I forget But he always has like sort of friendship stuff going on in there. Themes about that and everything he does. And then sometimes there's also themes about doorways to hell. I don't know.
Well, whatever happens with it, it will probably be better than X-Men: Dark Phoenix.
Probably.
Because that has been scheduled for another 3 months of reshoots.
Yeah. What is the casting looking like in that? Like, is it basically
it's
all
the
first
X-Men
class people?
Yeah, it's all the first class.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
No, it's not the first class people. Very important. It is the Apocalypse people.
Were they using none of the same actors at that point?
No, I'm just saying, first class has, I have warm memories stored. Apocalypse, I have none of those.
Right, right.
It's like the Nightcrawler.
They're Nightcrawler. They're Jean Grey. They're
right.
Cyclops.
But I guess none of the people from the '60s era First Class one, right? Those people are wrapped up.
I feel like
did anybody? Like Mystique.
Mystique.
Yeah,
what's
because
her name? I'm blanking on her name.
Well, Jennifer Lawrence.
Jennifer Lawrence
is kind of become the star of X-Men.
Yeah.
And
I feel like she's still in it. I think probably
Fassbender.
Xavier Magneto. Yeah,
I think Fassbender is in it. I didn't hear anything about Xavier. In something I read recently.
Unfortunately, Fassbender is not the greatest at picking movies.
Was like,
no, he's good at acting.
He's pretty good at
acting. Picking projects.
Yeah.
I tried watching that movie Snowman over the weekend.
I don't know anything about it.
Why would you watch that movie?
What's Snowman?
Because
some crazy serial killer movie that looked terrible.
Yeah. Because it was.
Is this
kind of
like in the 90s when Morgan Freeman did his serial killer movies?
Yeah, but I think those at least were solid.
Obviously Seven had some standing.
Those were like based on actual novels.
Well, so Snowman, wouldn't it be? Based on a novel?
Oh, that's right, it was.
Yeah.
But
not all books are good.
That's accurate. Not all books are good.
That's certainly not all adaptations are good.
Yeah. Definitely not all adaptations.
There's even in X-Men Apocalypse was the last one.
Yeah.
Even in that one, which I definitely felt was the weakest of all the kind of the second generation outings.
Yeah.
And was really kind of left me pretty disappointed. There were moments that I liked in it and stuff.
I might argue that it is the worst of the six X-Men movies. If you throw in Wolverine Origins, that just throws the whole curve off.
Yeah, it is all the same.
You think worse than the third one, though?
I think it might be worse.
Interesting.
Because there was stuff that...
At least some chemistry that had been built up.
Yeah.
They're adding, Jessica Chastain. But, yeah, it's Jennifer Lawrence and Michael Fassbender and James
McAvoy. Who's Jessica Chastain playing?
It just says Smith. I don't know who that is.
Okay. Here's my thing. Do we think it's possible this movie won't even get released? That in the midst of Disney-Fox transition, they're just going to shelve it?
The only thing that makes me say no to that is Jennifer Lawrence's presence.
Yeah.
I feel they'd really want to get that out there.
They're also spending more money on reshoots.
I'm just saying, is it possible it gets done, it gets shelved, and then after the MCU does their thing, then they release it? I don't know. Part of that is wishful thinking, because I hate the idea that they're going to ruin the Dark Phoenix story again, and then the MCU won't be able to do it, because I'd like them to do it.
But I actually feel like they'd probably hold off on doing it for a good while anyway.
Yeah.
But actors age, and you can't wait forever.
Yeah.
You know, so if you get started with the X-Men cast, you kind of need something that ideally you can do within, I'm going to say, 6 to 8 years.
Because imagine that Captain Marvel introduces the Kree, Skrull, all that kind of stuff, space thing, and then from there you spin off into the Brood.
Yeah,
and then you can do Dark Phoenix and the Shi'ar and all that kind of stuff. Like, you could easily do that as a side story off of Captain Marvel if that works.
Well, the X-Men movies, they've unfortunately already done a lot of the big ones.
But they haven't done the space stuff, which is why I think that's where they should focus. And that's why I think they shouldn't do Dark Phoenix, because Dark Phoenix requires the cosmic space stuff. Like, doing that just on Earth, which is that was the problem with Last Stand. That was one of the problems with Last Stand.
You know what?
They've already spent a lot of money. They need to recoup some of it. They'll release it.
I wonder. I still wonder if they might go in some kind of weird direction, sort of like they did with Spider-Man, where it's like really breaking from what you would expect. Like, you know, right now all the mutants are hidden in a, you know, secret enclave in the Savage Land, and they use that to introduce the Savage Land. And like Sauron, you know, well, they'd probably want to avoid that name, but but you know,
Pteranodon
Lord, whatever.
We'll workshop it.
We'll workshop it. Yeah. You know, where it's he's the bad guy.
I mean, that's Sauron. I mean, yeah, I know.
He outright named himself after the novel's character in the comic. You know, but it'd be like naming yourself Voldemort now.
What if he calls himself Voldemort? So just update the reference.
It just changes it as he goes. I'm Darth Vader now.
What if he's a big Twilight fan? He's like, I'm Edward. I'm Edward the Dinosaur Man.
I'm Hans Gruber now.
I like that Sauron would basically just changes his name based on whatever he's reading. Yeah. He just changes it to the villain.
Yes, I'm President Snow. The Dinosaur Man.
I am it, the Dinosaur Man.
Now, I really think that this Dark Phoenix is going to be another disappointment. I feel like...
Yeah. Here's the thing. Like it's going to be competent. It could be solid.
Yeah.
There's very little chance it'll be great.
Yeah.
And not even a great chance that it's just going to be, like, quite good.
Right.
I don't think that's likely.
Be better than the New Mutants movie.
Yeah. I actually have no idea what that's like, because it's
Nobody does. It's such a different, weird thing.
It's
also been in for, like, three different reshoots.
Yeah.
Well, so. Then they've kicked it to, like, next... It's not even getting released till 2019.
But here again, they've got, like Maisie Williams and a few other kind of notables that I think are going to make them want to release it.
Yeah.
But...
We'll see. We heard, just as we started podcasting, we heard that they have cast Spock on Discovery.
Yep.
And they have cast a fairly unknown named Ethan Peck.
Yep. As a reminder, on Discovery, you know, it's taking place just a little bit before, like, Kirk will assume the captaincy of the Enterprise, but Spock is still already in place as the first officer for Captain Pike.
Right.
Also, he's the half-brother of our lead on Discovery.
Yes. And, in the trailers for the season, it's clear Spock is off on this mission, that he's not going to be seen immediately, and Pike will assume control of the Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
But, we knew we were going to see him eventually, and the casting is not one where you're like, oh, wow, that's perfect, or whatever, because he's kind of just so unknown.
Right, but what's interesting is that, Alex Kurtzman, the showrunner, said... Basically, we searched for months for an actor who would bring their own interpretation, just like Zachary Quinto, just like Leonard Nimoy. Because Zachary Quinto is one of the best things about the movies, in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure.
I think he did a great job as well.
And it was another thing where they cast him and he hadn't been in much.
Yeah.
Right. You can't just... You want somebody who looks visually close enough.
Yeah.
But he's not like a dead ringer for Leonard Nimoy when he was young or anything. But he kind of made it his own, and he brought in enough mannerisms to fulfill all the... You know, give it a sense of history, too. But
Kurtzman says, you know, beyond the obvious logic, we want his empathy, his intuition, his compassion, his confusion, his yearning. Ethan Peck walked into the room with all that, including his being aware of his responsibility to Leonard and Zach and the fans. So they're very taken with him. And he is the grandson of Hollywood legend Gregory Peck.
Yeah. A.K.A. Hannibal from the A-Team?
No.
I'm thinking of Templeton Peck.
Who is Face.
His Face?
Yeah.
Ballpark.
Not even remotely.
Actually,
Gregory Peck was
weirdly
To Kill a Mockingbird. Atticus
right,
Finch.
Right. Yeah, God. For some reason, I had like a total blank on, like, I was like, have I ever seen any movies Gregory Peck? Yeah, he's like Hollywood icon.
Yes.
Super deep voice. And interestingly, I've heard just through the guy I do this Trek podcast with, Tex Trek, that the new guy has a deep voice, and I wonder if that's some, you know, family thing.
Maybe.
Because Leonard Nimoy, of course, had a deep voice as Spock, and so ideally, whoever you want to play him, you want at least some kind of, tone to it.
Well, if you want to see what this kid's been up to, he's been in a few things. The most notable is the 10 Things I Hate About You TV series on ABC.
Okay.
Or something like that. They haven't steered me wrong on Discovery just yet.
Yeah, I'm gonna give them the benefit of the doubt that they've made a good choice here.
There is a Magic the Gathering comic coming out. This is it's marking the 25th anniversary of the franchise.
Crazy.
And it is going to be focused on Chandra, the planeswalker, the sort of fiery planeswalker, which is probably a good call.
By the way, aren't they like? I'm thinking of some of the other character things created in the '90s, like right around that same time. But it wouldn't aren't Deadpool and Harley Quinn roughly '92? You know, mm-hmm. in the early '90s, like in there.
Yeah, we're probably coming up on their 25th anniversary.
Some big stuff was going down creatively there. You had those two characters, and you had Magic the Gathering
and Shadowhawk.
Shadowhawk also actually that image stuff was iconic if nothing
at
else
at the time yes
if nothing
yeah,
else Spawn
sure.
Nobody remembers Shadowhawk. I mean
Jim Valentino does.
I tell you, there's somebody out there with Spawn posters on his wall, and occasionally when he's smoking weed he remembers Shadowhawk.
Shadowhawk is his favorite character. He's like, that dude broke people's backs.
He was hardcore awesome. He was Punisher but back breaking.
Lastly,
broke back Punisher.
The back Punisher.
He gave me a sore back.
Lastly, we heard that Uncanny X-Men was returning. We heard that X-Men Gold and X-Men Blue are being canceled. And now we have a little bit more insight into that, especially with Extermination coming out this week. Basically, they're doing Uncanny X-Men as a 10-part weekly epic called Disassembled. It sounds kind of like what they did with Avengers right before they relaunched it with Jason Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be written by three different writers. Ed Brisson, who's writing Extermination this week. Kelly Thompson, who's writing Mr. and Mrs. X. And Matthew Rosenberg, who's wrote Phoenix Resurrection and is also writing Astonishing X-Men. Artists are Mahmoud Azrar from X-Men Red, R.B. Silva from X-Men Blue, and Yildiray Senar from Weapon X, and Per Perez from Rogue and Gambit.
And also this week's Extermination.
So, it's going to be an epic tale of mystery and tragic disappearance. Every remaining mutant on the planet will come together in an adventure so earth-shattering, it could well be the X-Men's final mission.
That's like the most generic write-up I've ever heard. Yeah.
Also,
but
and the tagline is, no one survives the experience. I want to like this, because I've been loving X-Men Gold, I've been loving X-Men Red.
Without saying too much, I think we all kind of dug Extermination this week, which is one of those writers and one of those artists.
Because
so that could bode well, but it's...
I generally like these creators.
Yeah.
But I hate this concept. I hate it. I am so tired of disassembling.
Yeah.
So I'm extremely nervous, because I've been really enjoying what they've been doing with the X-Men after a long, long time away. And I hope they don't mess it up.
Yeah, I'm like, what weird new status quo are they going to choose, you know?
What if all mutants only wear one sock now?
What?
I know, it's crazy.
In my time, they had two socks. I hate this new PC one sock.
Is it
sock
the right sock
crap.
Or the left sock?
It's the wrong.
It should have been the left.
It's the left sock, yes.
SJW's yes. ruined socks in the X-Men.
So here's a preview of what's going to happen on the internet.
Yeah, just brace yourself. You know, here's the thing is, like, I'm trying to think. Among the more notable recent big status quo changes was the No More Powers thing, when Bendis had, vast majority of mutants lose their powers. Was
I've
that
forgotten
it?
That whole thing.
Yep.
Yeah, but that was a big change. Mm-hmm. Then they, have there been any other sort of notable ones?
Didn't Iceman get depowered in that? Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Iceman lost his powers, and now there's two of them.
Yeah,
and he's getting there.
Although
gay.
Probably
not for too long.
On the,
More on that later.
More on that later.
Yeah. Well, that's to say, he'll probably still be gay, but there may not be two of them.
That's true.
They also had the thing with the virus from the Inhumans. The Terrigen Mists were killing them.
They're constantly trying to kill all the X-Men.
Yeah. Here's the thing. It's like, I think the secret to X-Men, at least for me, would be good writing. I don't really care about what the status quo is.
Yeah.
Mutants do kind of need to be on the outs as a general rule.
But I don't need them to be at the edge of destruction every time.
Yep. One of my favorite things about Grant Morrison's pitch for the Hal Jordan Green Lantern that's coming up is... when he basically said, no more world-ending threats.
Yeah.
He put it in a very witty way about how, like, we don't have the time for these kind of, you know, this sort of craziness all along. He very charitably said, please stop doing everything is the end of the world.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm like, man, that isn't one of the things that I want them to pick up on.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't like the X-Men because of world-ending stuff. Everybody likes it because of the characters and, you know, dramatic situations and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And villains and all that, too. But, you know...
X-Men Red is this really hopeful book about... I mean, they are pushed to the brink, but it is about sort of what the X-Men are supposed to be doing. And X-Men Gold had, like, the wedding and all that stuff. Like, there is a way to do villains and heroes and conflict that isn't what if we all get wiped out tomorrow?
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. And, you know, the last time I thought something sort of interesting was done with their status quo, and we've probably talked about this a few times, was in fact Grant Morrison's rather subtle way of doing it,
yeah.
Which is X-Men's mutants still on the outs, but corporate interests in, like, sort of, like, rich people getting grafts from them to get mm-hmm. partial little temporary mutant power lifts, but also that mutants were kind of a trendy hip thing.
Yep.
It was sort of, honestly, it continued the sort of racial metaphor,
yeah.
Where it's like, there's broadly speaking, there's lots of racial hatred against black people, but there's also a kind of a pop cultural love, and it's like, there's these weird intersections, and he was actually exploring that through X-Men, but he didn't make a big announcement about it. He's like, right. Not like, I'm changing the status quo of X-Men. He just kind of subtly did it.
Yeah.
So please learn from Grant Morrison, people. That's all I'm saying. I've mentioned two good examples of him, of what I like about how he does superheroes.
All that said, I kind of like the All Mutants Are Gonna Die thing this week, and we'll talk about that when we get the comics.
Yeah, we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
All right, and that's coming up next. We'll be back with just a minute to talk about comics for the week.
One familiar cry.
We're talking about comics for like Wednesday, August 15th, and I'm going to start picking up from what we were just talking about with Extermination Number 1 by Ed Brisson and Pepe Larraz, and it is about... It starts in Central Park, New York, in the destroyed Xavier Institute for Mutant Education and Outreach 20 years from now, and all my first thought was, man, we keep losing X-Mansions. I don't know how many times I've seen the X-Mansion destroyed, but it is a lot, and it's every version of it.
I'm going to bring up Grant Morrison one more time.
Okay.
One
more time is a lie. One more time on this podcast.
One more time on this podcast.
And even that's probably not true.
I'll see if I can definitely try and do a fourth one. Which is, I remember he made a slightly meta joke when, what is it, Cyclops, Wolverine, then they get shot down by those wild sentinels, and he's like, as they're going down, like, what is it, one of their other mutants is their, like, Beak or whoever they just saved is like, oh my god, we're gonna die, and he's like, don't worry, he's like, Cyclops has crash-landed more X-Wing jets than anybody alive.
Yeah. So there's this hooded figure making his way through the rubble. Definitely seems like maybe he's a time traveler because then he vanishes. And then we jump to the present, and this story is focusing on characters I hate. The time-lost X-Men that Bendis introduced us to.
Hate's a strong word.
Well,
no,
essentially,
I hate them.
You just like just
no,
just
I
don't
hate
care
them.
About
I hate
them
and I want
you
them
You don't
to
like
go
their
away.
Use, but you don't hate the original X-Men, right?
No, I just hate that they're in the I hate
right.
what he did with them.
Right. And it is the original X-Men now having existed a few years in the present timeline.
Right.
You know, they explain it in this that the Beast brought him into the present to try and keep him from that from some dark things happening. But now it's kind of maybe caused its own issues.
So it opens in Chicago, and the thing is, I never get tired of this scene. They've done it numerous times, but it's basically an anti-mutant mob hunting down a couple of mutant kids, and the X-Men show up and rescue them.
Yeah.
And that is what the X-Men should do, and so even though I dislike these characters, he put me right off on the good foot, like, yeah, this is the X-Men doing what they do. Jean Grey shows up and says, don't be afraid, we're here to help you. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I want my X-Men to be.
Right.
And also, I got to give credit to Pepe Larraz, who does a great job on these costumes and these characters. Like, the art in here is great.
It reminded me a little bit of, like, I don't know if it was, like, Olivier Coipel or something like that. But there, it was definitely, I really like the art in it.
Well, his renderings of the time-displaced X-Men outfits, I don't know. It feels like he gives them a bit more personality because it's less like the armor look that they had at one point. And I don't know. Especially Jean Grey. I love that costume, actually.
So I don't want to give away too much about this, but suffice to say, a couple of X-Men are going to die. There's a time travel element, so you know Cable's involved. And there's also an interesting bad guy who's used well here. Actually, not an interesting bad guy. A terrible bad guy who's used interestingly here.
Yeah.
And all of this is basically doing kind of what I like in the X-Men. I like the time travel-y stuff, and I think they're doing it well here. And I suspect that this is going to wind up resolving the time-lost X-Men story in a way that hopefully gets rid of them because I don't like them.
Yeah, well, the weird thing is like, I don't know what you do other than, like, essentially kind of send them back in time or make it so that they had never been in the present or something, you know, kind of weird time loopy.
Right.
Because unless they're going to say that there never was a five original X-Men thing, and maybe that is that crazy new status quo. They're like, what would happen in a world where the mutants never had like a group, a team to rally around?
Yeah.
Huh, that actually, now that I'm saying it, that almost could work. even though I don't want that to happen, because that's the X-Men's role, that's what they are. But that would be kind of interesting to see if they got, like, permanently time displaced or semi-permanently. Anyway, we'll see on that one. But yeah, I like this too. I thought the deaths were handled pretty decently. When time travel is involved, I take everything with a grain of salt.
Sure.
Yep. But instead of making me like, kind of like, sometimes when you're reading this kind of thing with time travel, X-Men deaths, and stuff like that,
none of this counts.
You're like none of it counts, or you're just kind of like groaning, like, yeah, whatever. This is tropey stuff. But there was a certain freshness and energy to it. It kind of reminded me of way back, like 10, 12 years ago, when we did what was that last big X event where we kind of it was a big crossover?
Messiah Complex,
yeah. Something like that, where it did have tropey elements,
yeah.
But the execution made it kind of exciting and cool, and then made it, the writing was like, oh yeah, this does feel like the team I know, and this is kind of what I want. I think
that was like the introduction of Hope and,
yeah,
focused on Cable.
That's
also
correct.
The reaction to both the deaths in here, I thought, gave it a lot of weight. I give credit to Brisson for writing that in a way. I'm like, okay, these are characters who've seen deaths before, but I like that it felt like we got the impact we wanted, mm-hmm, out of it.
Yeah,
and also so. because of who it is. I kind of feel like both of those could stick easily.
Yeah.
So, and the big reveal at the end was not a huge shock, but I am curious to know what that all
means. It's an interesting notion.
All right. So I'm looking forward to it. Dave, what's your first pick?
My first pick is Edge of Spider-Geddon number one.
You talked about this one.
I messaged you the other night.
Yep.
I was saying to telling Andy, I'm like, if you had told me 10 years ago that a comic called Edge of Spider-Geddon could actually sell and maybe even be good, then I would have said, you're an insane person.
And what would you have said if I said, and it's going to be your pick for the week?
And it's going to be my pick of the week. but having, now we've gone through the Spider-Verse, mm-hmm, you know, various incarnations, which also began with an Edge of Spider-Verse, and this is...
And introduced Spider-Gwen, by the way, or Ghost Spider, as she's now known.
Yep. And had just endlessly fun tie-ins, you know, from the... You know, the crazy stuff like the Japanese live-action TV show,
yep,
Spider-Man of the, mm-hmm, 70s.
And the Hostess...
I was going to mention that. Yeah, the Hostess Pie ads one.
Also, Dave, I think you and I are both a little extra hyped for this right now because... They're tying back into Spider-Verse with the video game that's coming out.
Right, which by all accounts is going to be like possibly the savior of mankind,
yeah,
and dethrone Trump.
Yes, that's what I heard.
I believe there's a high possibility based on what I've seen. The graphics,
yes,
look great, so I don't,
yep,
see why not.
Christos Gage and Dan Slott were heavily involved in writing the story too. So
yeah, awesome. No, it looks really good. And you know, weirdly, I think this comic, even though it is not about those characters, maybe what mentally pushes me to say, yes, I'm going to get that.
Yeah.
This one is about, it's just in the same way that they zeroed in before they did the original Spider-Verse comic on some of those characters, like,
mm-hmm,
like Ghost Spider and,
yeah,
stuff like that.
Yeah.
This zeroes in on, of all ones, Spider-Punk.
Spider-Punk!
The big old punk rocker looking, Sid Vicious looking Spider-Man.
I think he likes to be called Spider-Man, though.
He does.
Yes, it is. It's a thing in the storyline. So he is like Hobie Brown, who is also
the Prowler
in the normal universe, the Prowler. But in this universe, he became with and also we see that this universe is like, it's like the anti-establishment universe.
Yeah,
all the heroes are like essentially leftist, anarchist, socialist punks, and
his grand villain that he defeated was Norman Osborn, who was the president.
Yes,
it's very, yeah, 60s anti-establishment.
Yep,
yeah,
yep, and it's interesting because I feel like it's a how did I not notice that the bat he's fighting says "Beat on the Brat"?
Yeah,
a la, was it the Ramones?
Yeah,
yeah. Oh man, that's great. This both kind of lightly spoofs anti-establishment and,
yep,
also is like, yeah, these guys are kicking ass.
Yeah. Also, Dave, it's worth noting that his powers came from a toxic waste spider or something.
Yeah, yeah. He's kind of, he's got a little bit of a darker edge. His unregulated, I'm going to say, unchecked libertarianism,
yes,
led to his creation, and he's going to beat it back with a bat.
I love his friend, Captain Anarchy.
His friend, his Captain America pal is Captain Anarchy,
yep,
in this. And there's an interesting threat, which is both a sort of corporate threat and a big cosmic sort of threat. It's kind of hard to describe. You'll just have to read it to find out about that.
But I do love that they are simultaneously, that they're sort of poking fun at themselves because they're posting about the notion of a corporatizing anti-establishment agenda, which is what this comic is.
Yes, right, right. Spider-Man is nothing if not an establishment character for Marvel. And the threat in this is that he is going to, against his will in a way, sort of become a corporate figure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, so yes, it's meta. I don't know if this is pop eating itself or
what. A little bit.
it also accomplishes all the stuff you normally like in like an Elseworld story or, you know, these Spider-Verse stories, which is to see how is this universe different from the regular one.
Right.
Now, had they shown much? Because I missed some spots here and there.
We had seen him, but he's not done much.
Okay. It is only a name drop, and I don't know if I want to say what it is, but yeah. Doctor Strange's incarnation in this universe.
So good.
Should we say what it is?
No.
Okay, I don't
want
to say what it is.
It's literally more of this universe.
It's literally just a name, but I was like, I would read the comic, or at least the miniseries based on this character.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like when Spider-Gwen first showed up. All of a sudden, there was this whole, you're like, oh, I want more stories in this universe. Like, that's how I felt about this.
Yep. Super, super energizing kind of story. It also, I will say, it begins with a fight between him and, of all characters, Thunderstrike. is it Eric Masterson?
Yeah,
but
in this universe, he's a Nazi.
Yeah, the 90s Thor, which, I mean, I don't know anything about that character, so I can't say it makes sense for them, but everybody knows that there is this fight amongst people who kind of have, like, that Viking fandom and stuff like that, the Nordic fandom, because crappy neo-Nazis and Nazis were our way into that stuff, too. And then there's, like, the kind of just pagan, chill, awesome Viking people. I got plenty of friends who fall into that category who are like, I will stomp your Nazi faces in. but it does make sense to occasionally have somebody who's kind of Thor-like, turn out to be a Nazi. At least in this world. Sorry, Eric. There's a special guest star who I won't say, but who is an awesome appearance in it that I did not quite call. I was like, where is this one going? And it ended up being a very, very cool character crossover. Is this entire miniseries? Because it has a to-be-continued thing on it, but it's sort of a...
I believe this is going to be just like the
It's like a gathering of the team of sorts.
Yeah, it's going to be five
episodes. And each issue, you'll kind of see what member gets gathered. So we will, I presume, get to see more of Spider-Punk in subsequent issues as kind of maybe part of
the whole conflict is the notion that he learns something about himself that makes him kind of heroic for going into this team thing.
Oh, right. Yes. There is kind of an interesting...
So I think he's going to play a big part in the
Spider-Man. There's an interesting reveal. And yeah, that... it's fascinating to see, like... This character could have just been a neat idea in a costume.
Oh, Nick, yeah.
You got the toy of him,
for
6 months or a year ago.
Yeah, mainly for a build-a-figure part.
But it's a great-looking toy. The design is great, and it really is kind of like... sort of a Sid Vicious style 70s, 80s era punk with like a torn, ripped jacket over a Spider-Man costume and stuff like that, and a mohawk or a spiked hair and stuff like that. It could have been just a fun idea, but instead they actually went and they built a really great character around it, same as they did with Ghost Spider.
Mm-hmm.
And it speaks well for how this Spider-Geddon is going to be...
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, like it should not. It shouldn't work. I'm one of those people who like.
Who wrote this?
That's a good question.
I don't know the writer actually.
Jed McKay.
Yep. And then I also love the art, which is kind of a little bit anarchic itself, but not like not too crazy out there. Gerardo Sandoval.
Yeah, well, this could have gone really, really bad if they had done like, say, Jim Mahfood had done it.
Right.
It would have been accurate, the sort of street art, but it would not have been as good. I like that it's a little anarchic, but it still
needs to still feel a little bit Marvel style. It needs to have some
Jed
fights.
McKay, is Jed McKay M-A-C-K-A-Y, or is it a different dude?
M-A-C-K-A-Y, yes.
M-A-C-K-A-Y. Well, there is a Canadian children's TV producer and writer whose name Jed McKay.
I mean, it could be.
It
could be, but I don't I don't know.
Anyway, so
it is a far better than right book than it has any right to be, and has me enthused for the entire Spider-Geddon project based on this one thing alone. So if you like Spider-Man, if you're going to play that Spider-Man game, If you are afraid of spiders.
If you love punks.
If you love punks, give it a shot. It's super awesome. Nick, what you got?
I don't have a new number one because I'm not fancy like you guys.
Yeah.
I'm going to pick something that Randy has picked the first two issues.
And
of.
It's still in the single digits, so. Yeah.
It is still in the single digits. So
Still needs promotion because otherwise this character can't possibly ever find any footing.
Right. There's certainly never going to be a movie about him or anything.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you sure? I mean, people are going to.
Yes, he launched the Marvel Universe as we know it effectively.
So, yes, we are referring to Tony Stark Iron Man number 3. And I believe we still have 1 and 2, right, Randy?
We do.
So, I mean, if you want to jump in on it, we still have it.
And do so. Just Dan Slott's Iron Man has been great.
Yeah, and that really is... There's a particular reason why I like this third issue more than the other two, which I've loved, but the usage of Machine Man, Stack, as Jocasta's boyfriend, mm-hmm. is particularly fun. I have a fondness for...
You know, I've got to ask this question. Classic Machine Man?
No, this is Next Wave Machine Man.
Okay. This is Fleshbag's Machine.
This is Fleshbag's
Machine. He's actually, they do a whole thing where he is basically like the militant robots rights.
Yep.
He thinks that doing a virtual reality and bringing in AIs is robot appropriation. He thinks Iron Man is robot appropriating by wearing armor.
Yes.
It would not work in the wrong hands, but Slott makes it work.
Yeah, Slott makes it work. But the bigger story of this one is that Tony Stark was rolling out a new... VR AI gaming experience.
Okay.
Where you can sort of do anything you want.
It's Ready Player One.
Yes, it is very much Ready Player
Got
One.
Got it. What do they call their thing? The Oasis?
Yeah.
Yes.
This one's called Escape. Or E-scape.
E-scape. So, I mean, there is a larger story at work as to why Tony Stark is doing what he's doing. And I actually really liked that punctuation towards the end of why he's doing it.
Yep.
But this is sort of a fun issue where people get to run around.
Can I guess why he's doing it?
No, because that would ruin things.
All right.
And you'd probably guess
Dave, I want to know what your guess is.
Okay, what is your guess?
Is it so that he can have some sort of emotional experience where he virtually reconnects with his parents or something like that?
No.
Okay, just checking.
That's a good guess, though.
All right, that's not bad. I was working at.
But it is also a fun idea where people get to run around and be Iron Man and.
Yep.
Well, the central concept of the issue is that they're beta testing this.
Yes.
So the beta testers are supposed to go in. There's about a dozen like Stark employees that are in there playing characters, and they want to tell. It's sort of a Turing test. They want the NPCs to see if you can tell. Who's an NPC and who is actually a person playing?
Right.
And if you can find out who the people are, then you get like credits. And if you kill NPCs instead, thinking that they're PCs, you get kicked out of the game.
That's pretty clever.
It's a good concept.
But there's little nods to all the Marvel Universe stuff. There's a Dazzler nod. There's a Unlimited Class Wrestling Federation nod, which I loved.
That's a deep cut.
D-Man makes an appearance.
D-Man does make an appearance. Some old Wild West Marvel creations make an appearance, which I thought was really fun. Slott, like some of the best Marvel writers, utilizes the Marvel Universe, and I like that a lot. And honestly, it's just a fun issue with some heart, and you throw in Machine Man, and you continue on the larger story of who the villain plotline, which I love.
I like that he's keeping that backgrounded, yeah.
Yeah. And again, I like that villain, so seeing him kind of brought to the forefront, because he's essentially a Z-lister.
He's low on the list, yeah. He's a big Iron Man villain, but a lot of people don't know him. The other thing I think is interesting is that with this book, Dan Slott has shown that over the long game, he delivers.
Yeah.
Like, he showed over the course of his Spider-Man that he knows how to play a long game and how to build a cast and that kind of thing, and he's doing the same thing with Iron
Man. I mean, this is a large cast, but he definitely has Tony Stark's voice.
Yep.
And making him an interesting character and much more layered than, I shoot blasters.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I'm just the guy all about technology, or I'm just about a guy in a suit. Which I appreciate. And I also appreciate his attention to Jocasta.
Mm-hmm. And
making her a better character. Not a better character, but a more rounded character.
Also, the art is fantastic.
Yes, the art by Valerio Schitti.
It reminds me of sort of Stuart Immonen a little bit.
Yep.
A little bit of Carl Kiesel. Like, it's good stuff.
It really, really is.
Nick, is your backup pick also about a rich man who fights crime using gadgets?
Yes, it actually is. How would you know?
I know that is your that's your like on Facebook. He's like, yes. Nick likes rich men fighting crime with gadgets.
But Nick also likes rich men who are on juries trying to determine whether or not Mr. Freeze is guilty of killing three
more specific. That's
weirdly specific.
It is weirdly specific. And that's why this book by Tom King, Batman number 53, is for me. No. But this is
Tom King wrote it for you alone.
This is sort of the finale to his three-part Cold Days story.
It's a shorter arc.
Huh? Yeah, about Bruce Wayne being on a
Bane call
jury.
Off this one, too?
No. There is actually a weird kind of a stinger at the end that leads me to believe, I mean,
Bane was secretly on the jury duty.
No.
Batman was like, I wondered who that hulking eight-foot guy
Bane
was.
No, Bane pulls off his mask and he's a horse. I will get revenge for my brother.
No.
Sorry, please continue.
There is no dead horses in this.
If I'm not mistaken, so there were two central sort of plot elements, and I don't know how big. One was, yes, the Bruce Wayne post the wedding kind of disaster thing, and kind of in a dodgy mental state,
yes,
ended up on jury duty and involved in something, you know, a thing with Mr. Freeze that he clearly had a role in as,
yep,
Batman. We know he's kind of been a little bit, like, kind of lost it a little bit right,
yeah,
now. And well, then, like, has Dick indeed taken over as Batman again?
Yeah, I mean, he's basically, well, for the time being, since he's on a sequestered jury, he is basically, Dick is running around as Batman, that he can't be Batman.
Right.
Which is probably a good thing for
his mental
break,
too. I think in that first issue, I think he, like, lands on, like, the rooftop of Gotham PD or whatever, and
Dick is smiling.
Well, I was thinking, like,
smiling.
Gordon, just like the second he lands, he's like, you're not him, or something,
yeah,
like that. He just instantly,
yeah,
knows.
You know what? Snyder did that bit too.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this is more about who Batman is and who Bruce Wayne is, ultimately.
Bruce Wayne is Batman and Batman is Bruce Wayne.
Whoa.
Yeah, but, you know, sort of the dichotomy between the two is Tom King definitely brings sort of the emotional impact of what those two people are,
mm-hmm,
and but kind of veils it with this, you know, Victor Freeze, is he culpable for these murders or not? Is Batman fallible? Is you know, what Gotham does to people,
mm-hmm,
which is interesting. There are a couple of twists towards the end that I wasn't expecting. There's also a big twist for Batman that he does himself, which I think people will enjoy, and I'm curious to get a reaction from. But yeah, it's an issue of Batman. I'm kind of sold on all things Batman, so...
The jury duty idea interests me. I might actually, since it was a short arc, I might read those back-to-back and see what I think.
Well, and also, it's got Lee Week's artwork, and Lee Week's draws the hell out of pretty much anything.
Yeah. Again, reminder, in case people don't remember, he's the guy who most recently was killing it on that Batman Elmer Fudd special that everybody surprisingly was like, oh my god, this is super good.
Yes. And he's done...
He's been around since forever.
Why am I blanking on what he's best known for? Randy?
Because he's always on the edges of comics. He rarely does super commercial stuff.
Yeah, he did some work on Daredevil.
He did a great Captain America miniseries.
Did he work with Rucka and something?
Yeah, almost certainly. He's always been around doing great stuff. He's an A-list artist who maybe can't quite hit deadlines.
Yep.
Because he never seems to be on, like, a regular project for long.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's great.
Yes. Yeah. He reminds me of, like, sort of the best artists on, like, Ed Brubaker's Captain America run, which included people like Steve Epting.
Yeah.
Lee Weeks, did he draw some of those?
He did, actually.
And he fit in perfectly. He's as good as any of those people.
Yep.
Dave, what is your backup pick?
My backup pick is the second issue of Star Trek Next Generation, Terra Incognita. Which
Wait
I guess
minute.
Is like unknown human or something.
Let me figure out the link between this book and your other pick.
Is there a link? Are
I don't
we doing
think
that?
Any link? I found a link between Nick's. I don't think there's a link between your two books.
Let's see.
Dave likes Spider-Punks.
Is there any
Spider-Punks and Cardassians? No, there's not really.
No, there's not like a lot of
Picard and those guys are honestly pretty establishment.
Yeah. Oh, I know. You like cross-dimensional stories.
Actually, you know what? These are both socialist stories.
Oh,
Star Trek
right.
is future socialism,
right.
and Spider-Geddon is fighting socialists in a.
Dave's a dirty commie.
World. Yeah, dirty commie. Picard's a dirty commie.
That's true. By the way, he's a very clean commie.
He's a very clean commie. So one of the things I was slightly worried about in this third part of what is the Mirror Universe stories that they've been doing in the time mm-hmm. was that they would kind of just focus solely on evil Barclay,
yeah.
and it would just be kind of like him kind of scheming and, in a way, kind of playing the rest of the crew.
I agree.
And I kind of was worried that they were not going to kind of get to hold their own. Well, weirdly, that plot really takes a almost total backseat to
complete
like an,
backseat, yeah.
the to an A plot, which involves a kind of a really desperate sort of peace talks between Cardassians and is it just the Federation,
Federation.
In general? Right. This is shortly after that, the big Borg battle at Wolf 359. So the Federation is like, we can't let anybody know, but we are in a super bad spot. Like, you know,
yeah.
like half our fleet is gone and all this. And so Picard ends up, they want a show of strength at this meeting. And so they ask Enterprise, you know, as the flagship to kind of... take the delegates to this kind of like neutral meeting ground, and there's all these kind of like things about how who can go and who can't.
Because
and
the Cardassians paranoia.
Super paranoid Cardassians, and they have to like be minimal security. They have to meet on this planet separate from the ship and all that.
No transporters,
and of course. Evil Barclay does, though, make a, like, essentially, like, a borderline racist joke
yeah.
about Cardassians as they're about to leave, and he's like, that's just my crazy sense of humor
yeah.
when he has a quick cover for
because
it.
Barclay's such a mess when they're talking about it, they're like, yeah, he needs to see somebody.
yeah, 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 Picard and, what is it, Troy, who kind of gets to be a little bit of the star of this issue.
Yeah.
They're just kind of like, eh, it's Barclay.
This felt to me like a classic Star Trek episode.
It
like,
did.
The whole, like...
There's kind of an extended time on the shuttle as they're heading down, and there's
yeah.
kind of like there's like these Vulcan sort of ambassadors
yep.
and stuff like that, or negotiators, and Troy and then the Cardassians, and they are obviously at odds, and yes, it did feel very much like that, and she kind of a character who very rarely on the show got to prove herself much gets to do some pretty cool stuff in this episode. Without saying too much, there is a sort of crash landing and some sort of survivalist elements in this one, and yeah, it's just pretty cool kind of classic next gen storylines. I feel like the writers on this, it's the Tipton brothers, I guess.
Yeah,
Scott
they've been,
David
they've
Tipton.
Been doing it since Mirror Universe.
They've been doing it since the Mirror Universe, and they had done stuff before that.
Yeah,
and they really have a good feel, I think, for the characters. It felt super Star Trek Next Generation-y.
Yeah.
Incidentally, I liked the art. I don't know why the Vulcans are colored yellow, as if this was a racist comic in the 40s and they were Japanese
I'm
or
not
something
sure
or
either.
Chinese. Because, I mean, it actually feels like one of those almost glitches in color separations.
Yeah.
Like, they were meant to just be, like, slightly paler or just not standard kind of human pinkish
yeah,
kind of Caucasian
so. I think
looking.
You're right.
And I think it just kind of came out because the artwork, there's certainly nothing in the artwork that's racist. It's only the coloring kind of came out weird.
By the way, I love a review where you have to say there's nothing in this art that's racist.
Well, you know.
Let me be clear. Nothing racist about this art.
sounds very defensive.
Yes, it does.
Actually, I actually don't know who this artist is, Carlos Nieto. I think he must have done some stuff in the past, but because he's a very good Trek artist.
He's solid.
He's,
yeah.
he's got the likenesses down pretty well. He can draw shuttlecraft. He can draw explosions.
Yep.
He can draw weird aliens.
Yep.
So I was particularly happy with this issue precisely because it kind of broke from the format I was a little worried they might follow. Not that I don't like Evil Barclay. He's fun.
Yeah.
I didn't want Picard and company to look like chumps, and they don't.
They don't. They look like experts.
Yep, and that's exactly kind of what I wanted to see. So where it goes from here is anyone's guess. Clearly, Barclay is going to be trying to probably sabotage this, work it to his advantage. But exactly how he's going to play it, his plans will unravel. I will be interested to see. Randy?
My backup is a book called Crowded Number One. It is an Image book. It is written by Christopher Sabella along with Rose Stein, who does the art, and Ted Brandt does the inks. I am given to understand by our staff or honor that a couple of these creators are Valkyries, so
okay.
they're women who work at comic shops. This is basically a world in which crowdfunding has gone awry. So,
in a kind of believable way.
Yes. A woman, it opens with a woman crowdfunding, hiring a bodyguard off a service called Defend, because there has been a crowdsourced assassination against her on something called Reaper. Now, she is clearly lying. We see bits and pieces in the art where we can see that she is lying to her bodyguard, that she is much more deadly, and that there's something more going on as to why she has this contract out on her.
Right.
Because she has this legendary huge... The notion of Reaper is that people put out a contract. Most times, it never even gets funded. Nobody takes them up on it. But this one, it's like up to 1.2 million, which is like a really huge number. And her bodyguard says, last time I saw one this big was the senator who drafted a bill cutting the arts budget. So she's... There's a little bit of midnight run at work here, whereas the bodyguard is this ultimate professional, kind of grumpy, and the woman who's being guarded is kind of this nudge who's like, doesn't understand the danger she's in a lot of ways. She kind of wants to keep going about her life. And she talks about her day where she, like, her whole job is doing all these odd jobs. So she rents out her house on what is essentially Airbnb. She drives for Uber. She walks pets. She babysits. She rents clothes. All this other stuff. So basically she lives on all these apps. And now one of them is being used to kill her. So I don't know what the mystery is as to why someone is actually trying to kill her, but the action is really good. The character interaction is really good. The art is fantastic.
What did you say? Like, how would you quite describe the tone of it?
Dark comedy.
Dark comedy. Okay, yeah. Cool.
Maybe even not that dark. Just kind of comedic.
Yeah.
But there are actual consequences with, murder and explosions.
Right.
So Midnight Run is, I would say, like, 80s action comedy is what I would describe it as. I really, really dug this, and I'm very curious to see where it goes from here. This was a hard book for me to make picks because I liked a lot of what I read. Like, I definitely loved.
You know what's weird is I was looking at the wall when we finished, and it was like we only got like four boxes instead of the usual maybe five or six boxes, large boxes of comics. And I was looking at it, I was like, well, there's not a ton that I'm like really excited about. I think this is going to be a lighter week for me. I might have trouble finding a pick. And instead, I read like five comics, and I liked all five of them, which is pretty rare for me.
Well, I mean, like I also would have picked Spider-Geddon. I also would have picked Iron Man. Like, there's a lot of stuff. So I also want to throw a shout out to Astonishing X-Men Annual Number 1, which is a story about the four remaining original X-Men since Cyclops is dead, as well as the new Charles Xavier, the kind of X, the more arrogant Charles Xavier. It is about them having a reunion and going to this town filled with anti-mutant bigots. Something weird is going on. The original X-Men have to deal with both their sort of disappointment of their adult lives and the worry that they've wasted their lives as X-Men, along with this weird Professor X and whatever's going on in this town. It is a great done-in-one story. Like, I really enjoyed this and gave me a little hope because I didn't love Astonishing X-Men, the first one that that this writer Matthew Rosenberg wrote, but I actually really like this one as art by Travel Foreman. It was a good stand-in.
I'm glad to hear that. I'll give it a look.
Star Wars Beckett is a one-shot focusing on Woody Harrelson's character and his crew from the Solo movie. I love those characters in that movie. I was glad to see more of them, and this is a good... heisty action.
I'm looking forward to reading that. It's one of the few things I didn't get around to that I wanted to this week, and the art was looking pretty kick-ass.
It was really good.
Too.
It's got three different artists. Flavor Number 4 is more of the fantasy cooking book that I'm really enjoying from Image. Magic Order Number 3 is more of the Miller, Lineal Francis Yu, or no, Olivia Copier. Secret magicians doing horrible depraved things to one another. The true. Weatherman Number 3 is... has that gorgeous art by Nathan Fox, is written by Jody LeHipp, who is one of the people who wrote Shirtless Bear Fighter, and continues to be this crazy sci-fi thing that I'm really digging, even though it is crazy anarchic fun. Ninjak number 10 starts a new story with Ninjak. I think this is actually a one-shot where he goes up against a cyber Ninjak from the 80s. It's a good done-in-one story. Features art by Larry Stroman of 90s Image. Injustice vs. Master Universe number 2 continues to be super fun. Great art by Freddie Williams.
A better story than it has a right to be from Tim Seeley.
Better story than it has any right to be, yeah. And also, Orko gets to be cool, which is not a sentence I ever thought I would say.
There's a cool bit in there early on where they're kind of, basically, long story short, the people from the Dark Injustice world are like, hey, He-Man, we bridged the worlds, and we need your help dealing with Superman, because he's a real problem. He's a super crazy fascist dictator.
Yep.
And, like, He-Man is like, they kind of make a joke about it at first, because he's like, when they're telling him, like, about his origins, they're like, yeah, he used to be this reporter named Clark Kent, and then he became this dictator. And they're like, well, he's like, first of all, what's a reporter?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, right. And they're like, well, it's like between a scribe and a town crier. Yeah. And like, they're kind of like kind of humorous. But then they actually say, you know, he actually offers up some insight. He's like, this, you know, the kind of guy you're describing who would take that job is not the kind of person who would become this dictator.
Right.
And they have to say, well, like, it's been a long time since Superman or was Clark Kent.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's a great way to lens the kind of dark Superman of that. And there's lots of interesting insights in there, including... Weirdly, I don't know why, but several comics have done this pretty well in the last 10 years or so. But He-Man actually has an interesting encounter with someone who's suicidal.
Yeah.
You know the scene in there?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, without, like, comparing it to the somewhat iconic scene from Grant Morrison's All-Star Superman.
But it has echoes of that.
And I've seen, you know, a few others that have popped up. But yeah, there's echoes of that. And I'm like, how did they write a good scene like that with He-Man? But they did. They did.
The whole thing is, I mean, this is just like Injustice. Injustice should never have worked, but because of Tom Taylor, I had such a touch with it. Tim Seeley has the same touch. He's doing interesting stuff.
Yep.
And it actually, weirdly, even though I have zero fondness for the Master Universe, the references they're making makes me want to go back and read the DC Master Universe comics and see if all that's in there.
Yeah, and I don't know if those, like, they had several different spins on it.
Right.
And so I don't know if, like, they had, if, like, some count but others don't, but I don't know.
Yeah, they make reference to his past and to some of his... other characters, and I'm like,
and
oh,
I know that it directly linked to the weirdly to the He-Man Thundercats crossover, which is I think where he got outed. You know, his Prince Adam identity got outed, and he just became. Oh, he's like, I guess I got to be He-Man from here on. But I don't know. It's good.
Doctor Strange number 4, which is I've been up and down on this book, but I think this is my favorite issue of it so far. Doctor Strange in space. They bring in an Infinity War character in an interesting way, and it looks like they may be going an interesting way to sort of give him some new powers and abilities, which is interesting. And then Terminator Sector War, which I think we all liked.
Yeah.
Which is Brian Wood writing a new Terminator book, where basically the pitch is that there was another Sarah Connor, basically. There was another woman who was being hunted by Terminator at the same time.
But her name isn't Sarah Connor.
No, she's a different person.
And also, I think somewhat notable in this is she's a little bit better able to defend herself because she's a cop.
Yeah, she's a cop.
But interestingly, she's kind of got her own problems. Like, she was having a crap-ass day even before the Terminator rolls in. And there's kind of an interesting situation that she's in as she kind of tries to put it together. I was, like... Well, this is by no means reinventing the wheel. It's arguably very derivative.
But it's a solid Terminator.
But I liked it much better than I thought I would.
Yeah,
I also kind of like the slightly indie art style of whoever that person is.
Yeah.
Well, they're taking elements from Terminator 3, which was the notion that other Terminators were sent back to kill, like, the leaders of John Connor's resistance.
Right, yeah. And, you know, like, I'm kind of like with the movies, I'm really honestly pretty much done at this point. I feel like they kind of ruined the franchise. It's not too bad in the sense, like, I'll always be able to enjoy the first two and the Sarah Connor Chronicles. And that's all I need.
Yeah.
But if you're going to kind of, like, open your mind at least somewhat to the expanded universe, that's a pretty good little story.
Yeah. I agree. Also, they should really just do Aliens versus Terminator or Predator versus Terminator or something. I don't know how they haven't done that yet.
Yeah, I don't know either. That's weird. Maybe those guys won't talk.
Dave, that means you don't talk. What else you got?
Let's see. I wanted to mention that new Incredibles comic, which is called Incredibles 2, and happens to be issue number 2.
Yep.
Incredibles 2, issue 2. And I'm kind of still liking this book quite a bit. In some ways, I like it over the actual Incredibles 2 movie. There's some kind of like light world building in this, and they are serialized stories. Each issue has 3 stories so far, 2 that continue in each issue, and the 3rd in each issue is a standalone kind of lightweight Jack story, just a 3 or 4 page kind of fun story.
Well, we know you love Jack stories.
I love Jack stories, but. It should be a testament to this that I'm taking them in stride. They're just fun stories. I kind of like it better that way, where it's not like he's not integral to the kind of somewhat more serious ones.
Right.
But there's actually some of all the stuff that you like, people like about Incredibles, which is the world building, some heart, and all this. In the first one, Mr. Incredible is trying to train his kids. He's like, if you're going to be superheroes, we got to kind of raise your game. And so this is about him trying to do that, but not be an overbearing parent in a way. Like, you could almost liken it to, like, teaching your kids at Little League or something like that.
Right.
But just on a superhero level. He's like, oh, I want to push him, but I don't want to push him so hard that I'm like this kind of crazy guy. And I liked that story. And then there's another story that was in the first issue you saw was a bedtime story told to Jack about him doing kind of like taking down all this stuff like all this big bad guy all by himself, and Dash and Violet.
Yeah.
Are kind of like, that sounds a little dodgy as a story, Dad. And he's like, okay, well, I'll tell you the real story, which he starts telling in this one, which kind of involves something about how he, when he and Mrs. Incredible were, like, first dating,
mm-hmm.
and a reason why they kind of kept secret, like, that she was involved in this mission. And it's a fun story so far. And then Jack shrinks down in his final story, and he fights ants.
Okay. is that Jack's thing? Is he just going to fight woodland creatures?
Yes. And actually, I guess he doesn't fight the ants. I think he becomes friends with the ants.
Oh.
Let's see.
You lied to me, Dave.
I have not read this yet, but Brian Bendis has his creator-owned comic from DC called Pearl coming out.
With Michael Gatos.
With Michael Gatos, with whom he collaborated on Jessica when they created Jessica Jones for Marvel. That worked out all right.
Yeah, it did.
But if you've happened to read any of like his old indie crime comics, Bendis's stuff like Scarlet, what else did he do at Marvel? Any of those other kind of creator owned ones? If you like him when he's doing his own thing, you should definitely check out Pearl. And then lastly, I wanted to mention that the final volume of Kill or Be Killed, one of my favorite Ed Brubaker projects.
Wait, did you like
ever,
that book?
I got into it kind of. It had to win me over.
Right. I think you.
I haven't picked every single issue of it, all 20 issues of it.
No, I think I picked one of them.
Yes. and I still remember, of course, when I picked the first issue, I was like, "It's so dark. I don't know if I'm going to be able to stay with it, but it's very well done."
Instead, it was like your favorite thing ever.
I was able to stay with it, and it ended on a strong note. The final volume is out here, so if you've been interested in it, or if you're just like want to shut me up, you can come in and just buy it. And in fact, just like a week or so ago, a friend of ours, Ashley, I can't say her name, suddenly last name, but anyway, she came by the store, hadn't seen her in a while. I think she had like some previous Ed Brubaker stuff, and I was like, hey, you might want to try Kill or Be Killed, and I gave my pitch.
Yeah.
And she ended up thinking that it sounded cool, so she bought like the three volumes that were out that day.
And read it in like a day.
Read it in like a day, called you back, and was like, when's that fourth one coming out?
And so, I was like, oh, it's next week.
Yeah. So that worked out extremely well for her, and for you out there in the studio audience that we don't have, who can also now jump on it and read the whole awesome comic in one fell swoop. So anyway, yeah, Kill or Be Killed. That's it for me.
Nick?
Just a couple more. Just League number 6, which is the penultimate issue of the first story arc.
That's a long first story arc. It's Snyder, isn't it?
Yeah. Snyder likes doing
long story arcs.
He gets to, because like his first Batman arc was basically a two-parter. Like 12
seven
issues.
It's a long opening story arc.
Yeah, it
is. But I guess when you are right now he is the linchpin, one of the linchpins for DC, he gets to say what he wants to do.
He does what he wants. It's like when Bendis was writing in Marvel, he could do whatever he wanted.
That's true.
Infinity Wars number 2, more big kind of Marvel world-changing stuff happens,
which we expect to sell out of early because unfortunately our numbers, we didn't get a chance to adjust.
Correct. And then the fourth issue of Jason Aaron's Thor book. A lot of ginormous stuff happens in this for the Thor fans, so take note.
Yeah, there was you were telling me there's some big stuff this week.
Yeah, it was also just an extremely good issue.
Nice.
But that is all that I have. All
right, that'll
hold that thought, Randy.
Oh, okay.
Just one moment.
Shock twist.
Although I'm not going to talk about it at length because I think we want to talk about it next week, the new Spike Lee movie,
yep.
Black Klansman.
Yep.
I did want to say I have seen it. I don't want to get into even remotely spoiler territory until my coworker's seen it. I did really like it, and I recommend folks go and catch it.
I'm gonna try and catch it.
Not gonna say anything else more than that, but it's definitely worth your time. It is both serious and also very funny, and has a great '70s vibe. So, it's an entertaining piece, just as film, and prescient and important to our times, I would say as well.
Do we find out who the Black Klansman is?
They do explain at the very end in a twist ending in which you find out you were the Black Klansman all along.
Oh, that's pretty good.
It was actually your own fractured psyche.
Yes. We are the true Black Klansman.
I mean, sort of.
All right. We will wrap up there, unless Dave has another shocking twist to spin on me.
No, that would be predictable.
Okay. All right. Until next week.
Yo, Joe.
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating and review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.